We're still at the, obviously, very beginning of the year. When Master's birthday passes, which was January 5th on Tuesday, it's sort of like the official end of our holiday season. A few of us were in here taking the big cloths down off the altar, and it's sort of like everything goes back to neutral. The carriage becomes a pumpkin again. We just go on from there. But every time we turn a year cycle, we start on a new rhythm. It's just sort of the inspiration of the Christmas holidays is over, and now we have to make something of it. We're also, of course, on an annual cycle with these readings, and this one, number two, is this. There's a repeat from the first reading into the second also, which is a very interesting phrase. I was the light, I was the life, I came into the world, and the darkness comprehended it not. It's a very interesting image to contemplate a little bit. Swamiji made a comment in a class he was giving where he said, we do not exist independently. What we think of as ourself is not really some closed system in which somewhere from our kidneys or our stomach we're generating a reality, but we are actually just a transmitting station for other vibrations of consciousness. And whatever vibration we're on, that's the vibration we transmit. And if we change our vibration, then we transmit another vibration. And everyone on the planet, on this planet, on any planet, but because we're on this one, let's talk about this one. Everyone on this planet is doing exactly the same thing. If you see evil people, they have attuned their consciousness to a certain selfish, hurtful vibration, and then they become a transmitting station for that vibration. We are part of a reality that is not only a global village, but there's an entire cosmology that we're part of. And these are not things that I can perceive, but this is the long-standing eternal religion of India, the Sanatan Dharma, as it's described, that Master and Swamiji have explained for us. And this physical world where we're living, where we can touch and taste and feel things through our physical bodies, is still just a reflection of a much higher plane. The way they try to explain it to us, even in this world to understand it, everything begins with an idea. And then more energy is added to that idea, and eventually that idea is manifested. This physical building that we use and appreciate so greatly, there's a huge box full of plans for this physical building that lived under the bed of our guest room for a very long time. And now I think it's gracing the underneath of someone else's bed, but I'm not really sure where it is. It's just not in our house anymore. But it's a huge number of plans. All of them had to be carefully drawn. Before they could be carefully drawn, somebody had to conceive of the idea of this building. And there was just somebody somewhere thought, let's build a building. And thank you, Lord, that you put that thought in their mind. All the plans had to be drawn. Then many, many people had to do the very hard work to bring this into manifestation. But if it hadn't started with that idea, it would never have happened. And so the masters tell us that everything about the world we're living in also is emanating from the level of the plane of ideas, which is called the causal plane, the plane of energy, where essentially the plan is laid, and then finally it's manifested in this world. So everything we see here is a reflection of things that are happening on a much bigger scale. And Master described once the physical universe, he said, is like a little basket under a great balloon. And that great balloon is the astral world, and the physical world is just tiny by comparison. Now, I don't know if we're talking about physical space, exactly what we're talking about. But what we're talking about is an inverted pyramid with our little part being the most compressed. And the real energy of it, because it goes out to infinity, expands from here and then also is pointed down here. So when we see a world like the world we're living in now, which is full of conflict and confusion and seems to be getting much worse, just much worse. The overall refinement seems to be going down at a very steep rate. And, you know, really tough things are going on out there. We have to also understand that there is another world, another vibration of reality in which this is also happening. When Swami Kriyananda when we, all of us, were deeply engaged in what was litigation over freedom of religion, really, as to whether or not, you know, there's a history in America of starting churches. When our friends in Italy heard that we were, you know, that we were a church, that we had started a church in America, they just found that utterly incomprehensible, you know, because there's the church. You don't start a church, there just is the church. And but in America, we do this. And in the good old American spirit, where business and religion and everything gets all mixed up together, whoever gets there first and starts the first church always thinks they own it. And then, of course, there's the second church. And then the first church tries to tell the second church that the second church got it wrong and the first church has it right. And then usually after the second church, there's the third reformed version of the second and the first church, and on it goes. Well, we got caught in one of those big time. And the first church thought that they had it right, and we weren't so sure about them having it right. And it went on for a very long time. And it was no joke, because you lose in court, you lose a lot. So our right to be disciples was really at stake. And the whole question of what is Master's mission, what is Master's work, is it really owned by anybody, or does it belong to the world? It was a serious struggle, and it went on for 12 years, cost us millions of dollars. And in the end, here we are. But in the middle of it, Swamiji had to have open heart surgery, coincidentally or not, but he did. And he had to have a valve job, as he put it. Anyway, one of his valves had to be replaced. And during the night in the hospital, he had a very profound vision. He was in Sacramento. And in fact, he called us and said, "I'm going back to Ananda Village, but before I leave, I want you to drive to Sacramento." So we just got in the car and went to Sacramento. We sat down in front of him, and he told us about this vision that he'd had. And he said, "You know, this lawsuit that we're engaged in with lawyers and papers and depositions and all this," he said, "this is the manifestation of a struggle that's going on," he said, "primarily on the causal level, where there are also beings of light and darkness. Anything we see in this world is because it exists higher, as above, so below." So on that plane also, there was a war of ideas. And the war of ideas was between dogmatism and freedom, because that's what's going on in this world right now. Is, you know, are things fixed and have to stay the way they're supposed to stay? Or is this a time of individual learning, self-expression, attunement, you know, self-realization is the exact opposite of this is how it's supposed to be. And Swami said, this is going on the causal plane, which is whether Master's work, precisely speaking of it, is going to go the way of Christianity, where this limitless vision of potential just gets brought down into my church, my Jesus Christ, my Savior, my way. Or whether or not this expansive power of individual spirituality, my ability to tune into God, my right to tune into God, my freedom to tune into God as I feel it, will it endure? And Swamiji said, you know, we're just instruments of that greater battle. And the high causal beings want to use us. But if we refuse, they'll find someone else. It's really our opportunity to be part of this force of light. We are instruments for certain vibrations of consciousness. And if we shift our consciousness, we become instruments of other vibrations. So our part in all of this, and this is the other part that's very interesting to me, is in a very real sense, you see, everything that happens in the external world is just a mirror for us to understand what's happening inside ourselves. That's what this whole world is about. We project what we are, and then we see it more clearly. We behave in a certain way, and people treat us a certain way. And then we begin to understand who we are and what we're doing. This is what how we train little children. Swamiji often talked about one of his little cousins, who was a kind of a tough kid. And the mother said, "Darling, you should never hit back. You know, you should never hit back." And he said, "I never hit back. I always hit first." It was just his way. He was just trying to teach him, maybe there's another way. No, this is my way. I go out there and I get what I want first. And then we find out, how's that working for you? You know, in the sandbox when we're children, in the office when we're older, in our homes, we're with our own children, how is that working for you? And then we gradually begin to find out. And what's always going on with us, isn't it, is a certain war between the forces of light and the forces of darkness. You know, we're always trying hard to lift ourselves into that pure freedom of selfless love. And then there's always a piece of us that's just kind of whispering, "You really think this is going to work? You really think this is a good idea? You really think those people can be trusted? You really think you can get along without this? You really, you know, my little habits, my little this, my comfort, my that, who knows?" And just all these different things, that's the same war. Do we have the courage to cling to the light? Do we even understand the light? Do we even recognize the light when it comes? The Bible says the light shone in the darkness, but the darkness didn't comprehend it. Isn't that where we are? My comforting phrase is, seemed like a good idea at the time. Because there I was in the darkness, and the light was shining, and the darkness did not comprehend the light. So the darkness did something that seemed like a good idea at the time. But then later on, as we began to see more light, we realized it was not a happiness-producing action. And how did we learn it? How do I learn it? Well, I tried it. Swamiji was never much inclined towards slang. But one of the phrases that he really liked, one of the few that he really liked, was, "Been there, done that." He thought it was very profound in very few words. As a wordsmith, he appreciated the simplicity and the philosophical depth. But that is what we're working with all the time, isn't it? But at the same time, and this is the interesting edge that all yogis have to walk, because the external world is also real. And exercising our consciousness correctly in the world is also required of us, especially us inside this building, us disciples of these masters, because the masters take this great interest. There's all of these personal dramas being acted out all the time, all these billions of people on this planet here. Every one of us is engaged in this very serious personal drama of the soul's long journey from dark into light. And the soul itself never ceases to be pure gold, as they say. You can take gold and you can bury it for as long as you like, as deep as you like, and as much muck as you like. But when you finally pull it out and get it all washed off, it is exactly as it always was. And so that essence of divinity, which is who and what we really are, that pure light, which is our nature, even though we lose track of it ourselves, it never ceases to be. And everything that we're doing, really, literally, every minute of our life, is just an exercise in remembrance. One beautiful Sanskrit word, which really is untranslatable, is smriti. And smriti means divine memory, which is just, every so often, gradually, we remember. And when you remember, you really remember. It's not like you've created it. You just remember. This is what's true, and this is what has always been true. You know, it's literally waking from a dream. I had a ridiculous, horrible nightmare the other night. Fortunately, it was brief. Somehow in my dream, I'd been given some polishing tool that was supposed to be good for my teeth. And very casually, carelessly is actually the right word. I just began to use it wildly until I had pretty much dissolved my teeth. And in the dream, they're beginning to just fall out, which is very unpleasant, very. And then suddenly it occurs to me, you know, that once they're gone, they're gone. And I'm watching myself turn into, you know, like a woman with no teeth, just right in front of the mirror. Just this terrible experience. And then I woke up. Oh, thank God, you know? It's just like it didn't really happen. No. So they say, you know, we're using the polishing tool and we're using it all stupidly and our teeth begin to fall out and our brains begin to fall out and our bodies begin to die and it's such a nightmare. And then, oh, we die. And we say, oh, you. It didn't really happen. But how we participate, how we respond. You know, I had another dream in which I was executed. I've shared it with you before, and I had my head chopped off. It was really, that was a fun dream. A friend of mine just, it was time for him to chop my head off. He was a very good friend, and we were together, and, you know, it was like, okay, it's time for you to chop my head off. That's fine. And I just put my head down to have my head chopped off. With sudden, this panic came about pain, that this could hurt, having your head chopped off. It hadn't occurred to me until then. And then I remember Master saying that the soul is not stupid. When it sees that the body is just about to be finished, it gets out before it happens. In other words, your consciousness withdraws, and so you don't actually have the moment of impact. So just as I was about to have that happen, my soul withdrew in the dream, and I start shooting upwards. And in this case, I just let go like that. Just let go. I was so happy it was over. Bye, bye, Asha. That's what I said. But very sweetly, bye, bye, Asha. Finished. And when I woke up, I was so proud of myself. In the tooth dream, I was so mad at myself. What an idiot to pick up a tool you don't even understand and knock your own teeth out. What a moron you are. But that's how it happens, isn't it? Like sometimes we look and think, what have you been thinking? What could you have been thinking? And on the other side, we see, oh, I caught it right. I did that one right. Whether it comes in a dream or it comes in waking life, who knows? But you see, there's always this battle. The light is shining, and is the darkness going to get the point this time? Now, we're on a planet which is heating up. They say you can tell the consciousness of the planet by the kind of music people listen to. I have made a resolution not to be the policewoman of the entire planet when it comes to horrible noises, so I'm not going to say anymore. I'm just not going to say anymore. But you can see, as Swamiji described it once, he says it's like the world needs to explode. That's a kind of scary way to put it. But he said it's like people want there to be a war and a fight and an explosion. You can just feel it. You know, it's just like everything is just pushing harder and harder, and sensuality is more explicit, and violence and anger and complete disassociation from the divine center is just becoming stronger and stronger. It's a war on the causal level. And simultaneously, people like us, you know, we're also comprehending the light in a bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger manner. Master said, Master predicted, Master declared that there would be a cataclysmic confrontation between these forces. Another interesting sadhu put it in a very interesting way. He said eventually, and he was talking on the astral plane, the Asuras are the demons, and the devas are the gods, the light and the dark forces. And he said before the real confrontation between the devas and the Asuras, if it happens on the astral plane, it will then reflect down in this world. He said the Asuras will all fight with each other. He said, and that will weaken them as they fight with each other. And then when they have done enough fighting with each other, then the real light and dark will take place. I thought about that many times. I heard that about 40 years ago, because you can't really tell who's good a lot of the time. A lot of the time you just see bad and worse sort of going at each other. You know, everybody in the conflict. It's not always true, but sometimes it's very hard to tell, you know, who's fighting for what? Everybody's just fighting for themselves. But not us. Because we have a very different... we're in a very different part of the journey. The part of the journey we're on is to always comprehend the light. No matter what. No matter what, how intense the darkness may look, our part is to always comprehend the light and always be on the vibration that we can be a channel for that. Because all the other souls in this little story with us, this big story with us, each one of them is living exactly what we're living. What am I going to choose? And what we choose is to a very large extent dictated by how powerful that light is shining. You know, how much our eyes are open, how courageous our hearts are feeling, but also how powerfully that's pulsating. And what is that pulse of light? Where does it come from? Yes, it originates with God, but how does it enter this world? Through all of our consciousness, isn't that so? The masters come, they invite us to join them. Jesus walked through the land there and he saw his disciples and his words, two words, follow me. That's what the being of light, the guru, the master, the angel, the saint, that's what they're always saying, follow me. Oh no, but I have to do this, I have to do that. No, follow me. And we need to really hear that. We need to hear that for our own sake. We need to hear that for the sake of everyone who shares this planet with us. There's an initiative coming from Ananda Village, from Jyotish and Devi, really encouraging us, leading us this coming year to really think in terms of being instruments. Our resident astrologer, Drupada, who himself remarks that he doesn't really usually check the horoscope every day. He says he's not one, even though he knows these forces are there, he sees no point in every day asking where the planets are and therefore what I should have for breakfast. It's not really the way he thinks about it. But astrology is one way that we can look at a bigger picture and symbolically represented by Mars and Mercury and Saturn and all of those things about which I know almost nothing, but I know that it's true because the inner world of the chakras and the outer world of the heavens are one reality. Everything in the external world is a reflection. And Drupada said, it doesn't look real good this year. You know, it's going to be a little tense. There's going to be a lot of energy and it's not all going to be harmonious. Well, in 1951, Master thundered to the church where he was standing, you don't know what a cataclysm is coming. Swamiji was in the audience. What was that now, almost 70 years ago? Swamiji was in the audience and he said he thought it was coming. Master was speaking on Sunday and it was coming on Monday. It wasn't like, oh, someday all these forces are going to crash. He said, now. Time is a little bit tricky sometimes in prophecy, but Swamiji from the beginning was always telling us. We were always getting ready for the end of the world on a kind of regular basis. Because, and people would complain, Swamiji, why do you talk about these things? I said, Master said it to him. As a disciple, what is he supposed to say? Oh, this is unpleasant news, I'm not going to share it. But you don't have to be a prophet now. You see it, you feel it. Whether it gets much worse or not, it's bad enough. Let's just put it that way. That people of the light must unite. And we must be very attentive to our consciousness and very consciously be instruments of that power. Swamiji said the real purpose is very simple. People have forgotten God. People have become the center of their own universe and imagine that the only thing going on is what I want. Well, how's that working for you? You know, been there, done that, didn't work. Plus, we're just simply not in charge. We can put out as much energy as we possibly want to control everything. and it doesn't work. And sooner or later that cracks, which is why all of you are here. And this realization that there's something else going on. And what's going on is that we are part of a greater reality, and that reality is divine. And Swamiji says our job is to witness that, witness for that. That doesn't mean preach it if you're not asked. That means to be on that level of consciousness and to vibrate it all the time. You know, I am a child of God. The divine light lives within me. I wish to be an instrument of that light. Lord, use me. I offer the little self into thy infinite light. Make me an instrument of thy love. And radiate peace and harmony. Devi has suggested very strongly, there's Master has a very simple prayer. And the prayer is a way of bringing harmony to all situations. Lord, fill this world with peace and harmony. Fill this world with peace. Lord, fill this world with peace and harmony. And then, Lord, fill me with peace and harmony. Master has suggested this as a way of bringing peace and harmony to all situations. We cannot harmonize this whole world, but we can take the world, the part of it that we live in, and we can become a radiating station so that more and more, when the light shines, the darkness will part and that light can be comprehended. You know, for our sake, for the sake of the planet we live on, for the sake of all those that we love, you know, this is our responsibility. Nothing else that we're doing really matters, or everything else that we're doing only matters if we have attuned our consciousness to the right vibration and have become an instrument of that light. I would like actually for us to simply do the peace and harmony together, so I'm going to lead us in it. The way Master suggested this, we should do it 5 times a day, he said. He said it really takes scarcely more than 2 minutes. And you say it to yourself usually, but I think we'll say it out loud together. The first phrase is, Lord, fill this world with peace and harmony, peace and harmony. And we'll just repeat that 10 times. And then we'll repeat the same thing, Lord, fill me with peace and harmony, 4 times. Okay? Lord, fill this world with peace and harmony, peace and harmony. Lord, fill this world with peace and harmony, peace and harmony. Lord, fill this world with peace and harmony, peace and harmony. Lord, fill this world with peace and harmony, peace and harmony. Lord, fill this world with peace and harmony, peace and harmony. Lord, fill this world with peace and harmony, peace and harmony. Lord, fill this world with peace and harmony, peace and harmony. Lord, fill this world with peace and harmony, peace and harmony. Lord, fill this world with peace and harmony, peace and harmony. Lord, fill this world with peace and harmony, peace and harmony. Now let's say the same prayer, visualizing ourselves being clear and perfect instruments. Lord, fill me with peace and harmony, peace and harmony. Lord, fill me with peace and harmony, peace and harmony. Lord, fill me with peace and harmony, peace and harmony. Lord, fill me with peace and harmony, peace and harmony. We'll have just a moment of silence as we absorb those vibrations into ourselves.